Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 2 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock. Do the hammerlock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock.
Fine, pals. Welcome back. You've made it to another edition of Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I believe we're like 37 episodes in now, but we're back for another match of the week edition of the show. Those being the ones where we have a whole big old chat about what was my favorite match of the week, one that I did an illustration of. Said illustrations are available for purchase, by the way, at christhings.com.au. I'm very excited to be talking about the match of the week this week, that being Shingo Takagi versus Brian Danielson. Not the one that just happened, but the one from like 14 years ago. More on that later. Very stoked to have my dear pal Brad on the show joining us again. We'll get to that. We'll chop it all up. But in the meantime, we've got our what's going on in the world of Chris Things intro segment. Quite a bit going on, you know, as always. I've been talking a little bit now about how busy July I've gotten, and we're in the thick of it. This Sunday is my next event that I got coming up. Very stoked to be involved in Forge Forward's Mini Mall event. So this is a really cool one. This is kind of like, you know, I do some sort of artist markets that are quite large, you know, like the Great Artist Market had upwards of 50 rad artists as part of it. This one is feels like a really highly curated exclusive club that I feel privileged to be part of. The awesome Amy Crow, the, you know, founder of Forge Forward, has put together this fantastic biannual event, the Mini Mall, and it's a special kind of lineup of local Brisbane artists, kind of, you know, emerging artists across a variety of different kind of specialities. Some more established, some more on the newer side. So I'm honestly stoked to be a part of it. I've been very excited keeping an eye on all of the different highlights that Amy's been doing as the sort of lead up to the event. But yeah, it all goes down this Sunday at the Station, local art space in Fortitude Valley here in Brisbane. I can't wait. There's going to be coffee on hand. There's going to be treats on hand. There's going to be a bunch of rad art on hand. Dogs are welcome, which is always very important to me as a big time dog guy. I'm very stoked for that. So if you're in the Brisbane area, please feel welcome to come on down. I'm sure it'll be an excellent event, starting from 10 o'clock, I believe, 10 till 3. But, yeah, get a little giddy up. If you jump on christhings.com.au on that events page, you'll find all the deets. Yeah, it should be a delightful time. But, yeah, it's been a fun little old time coming out of the artist market the other week. I've sort of got onto a bit of commission work that I always love. For all of you that may not be aware, I love to do commission work. If you have a weird, you know, and wonderful art idea or just something that you want to bring into this world in Chris Thing's signature style, well, you know, hit me up. We can bring that into the world. You know, prices starting from about the $150 mark, depending on you know, level of time involved. But no, I love getting to do this stuff. My favorite part is when it's something, you know, very specific, especially the more weirder kind of like concepts. It's always such a fun challenge for me to be able to kind of bring that to life. And then, yeah, you know, just it's such a delight to make something that, you know, a client is happy with and kind of bring some joy. So I've been getting back into that this week, working on a few different things that I hope to you know, be able to unveil for you all in the near future. I've also been continuing on with our bloody old Way of the Blade look back. So I had the you know, t-shirt launch last week, early this week, for the commemoration of the amazing Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin WrestleMania submission match. I was honestly quite stoked with that. I had a follower suggest, hey, I'd like to see this on a shirt, and man, I'm one to oblige. Let's see what that looks like. I whacked it on a shirt, and then I was just delighted by how that went. You know, he had quite a few sales in that first day from when it was I first posted it on Instagram, and yeah, it just makes me real happy. You know, kind of getting back to that thing of you know, such a compliment when someone buys an artwork of yours and hangs it on their wall. But I mean, I love t-shirts because people are wearing that. You know, it's like they're deeming your art cool enough to wear on their body and then be like a walking billboard for my my arts. So yeah, very very complimented and tickled by that. Then yeah, we had the latest one go up the other day. Look back to that amazing Terry Funk versus Harley Race NWA World Heavyweight Championship bout from 1977 in Houston Wrestling. I adore this match. If you have not seen this match, please, I highly recommend going out of your way, especially if you're not that familiar with the world of kind of 70s wrestling, or the you know, sort of like a NWA champion, NWA challenger version of Terry Funk from that time, or Harley Race for that matter. You know, that dude in the 70s was really the face of the NWA, having amazing matches all around the horn. But yeah, I just think this match is such a blast because it there's just so much that I feel that just captures the magic of this gritty 70s wrestling world, that, you know, wrestling is just so different to that now. But, you know, a lot of subtleties, a lot of, you know, slow build, but building to such a violent crescendo, and that moment of the, you know, moment that I chose for the illustration of, you know, Terry, you know, whacking on that spinning toehold, you know, Harley Race is just hanging on, about just nailing Terry with these crazy punches, and Terry is just squirting out blood. So good. So, so good. I love it. But yeah, I, I hope you'll dig it, but it had a holds a special place in my heart as well, because it was the first illustration that I did for this whole Way of the Blade project. So I did this back in 2019 now. Man, that is wild. It's 5 years ago. Books are weird. They take a while to come out. But, yeah, it was a cool one because it sort of, like, set the tone for the illustration style for the whole rest of the book. And a style that's then, you know, a lot of people now kind of, like, approach me, I guess, Avan, from... you know, originally coming across me from that first Way of the Blade book, and, you know, want other stuff in that style, which I'm so happy to do, you know, and I think, yeah, I don't know, it's just kind of cool that the idea of one drawing, one artwork, one illustration, really kind of like defining a good part of my life going forward. You look back at it, you know, I think if maybe that style was a little bit different, or I came from a bit of a different angle, maybe it wouldn't have gone over so well. Things could be very different. I could be doing a very different thing right now other than trying to be a full-time artist and illustrator. I don't know. It's a weird kind of full circle kind of moment to look back on that first illustration that I did for that book that, you know, I was stoked that book did very well, and yeah, here I am. But anyway, all right, I think that's enough rambling. I think we are now ready to grab Signor Bradley and talk a little bit of Match of the Week action. All right, here we go. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I promised you a match of the week, and I'm delivering. I have a dear friend of mine, Bradley, on the line. Welcome to the show, Brad.
Thank you, Chris. Well, thank you for having me back again.
Oh, I'm very happy to have you back, and I feel like it's quite appropriate to have you back on this episode, because not only did we watch the big American Dragon Bryan Danielson versus Shingo match recently, the almost live, the one that happened at Forbidden Door. Mm-hmm. We watched that one together. We also, in the lead up to that, watched the original Dragon Gate USA one together. So, you know, I feel it feels quite right for us to now be able to do a bit of a debrief and talk about it for the show.
Plus, I'm on here for the Danielson matches. That can't be all of them, because there's so many Danielson matches. But last time was a Danielson match, so I'm doing it again.
I'd like if we could continue this every time we have a Danielson one. I'm like, oh, gotta have Brad on here.
Oops. Clearly, I'm the Danielson expert. I stole some moves from him. I must know something about it.
I love it. Okay, so for this match in question, for the matches of the week, I try not to kind of like plan it out too much. You know, I try to make it a bit spontaneous if it's just, you know, whatever I watched that week happened to be the best thing. But sometimes you have a bit of an inkling, you know, like you're like, oh yeah, it's this Forbidden Door match, there's no way that you know, Shingo and Danielson is not going to be incredible. You know, because I had those really fond memories of that Dragon Gate USA one. We watched that in the lead up, as I said. And then, you know, somehow after watching the rematch, and I don't know whether this is a hot take or not, but for me, the rematch just didn't quite live up to the first one. What do you think?
Probably not. Like, as we talk about it, I'm sure we'll get into why that's the case. But like, I minutes ago, I just finished rewatching the Forbidden Door match. I'm like, it's still really good. But yeah, the Dragon Gate USA one's probably better. And yeah, for a variety of reasons, but neither of them are bad.
Yeah, I mean, both very fine matches. I don't know whether in hindsight it was a bit of a mistake of watching the original one before this. Like, if I hadn't sort of like sizzled the palate that much, maybe I would have enjoyed the rematch a lot more without, you know, having the rest of it in my mind. But yeah, it's weird because obviously I sort of was like, oh yeah, that's probably going to be it, and then I didn't expect that, you know, my favorite match that week would actually be a match from like 14 years ago in Dragon Gate USA.
Yeah, I think like a big part of it is the presentation of it all. Like I think we have like a certain nostalgia for, and so we enjoy a lot matches from then and in those smaller promotions from then. And so this, the Forbidden Door match, even though still a very good match, like there's just something about the atmosphere there and sort of the just the vibe of it all that it's not bad, but it's not the thing that sort of tickles our fancy quite as much as watching a show from, you know, the 2000s in a smaller venue where with a loud crowd.
Yeah, I think, but yeah, we'll obviously get into the whys and all of the things that I think maybe could have been done better in the rematch, or maybe could have been done better isn't a good way to put it, but like just that didn't hit quite as well for me as the original. But I think the biggest part, you know, I think the nostalgia, what you're saying, is a valid part of it, right? So I don't know about you, but I remember being a massive Dragon Gate USA fan at this time, you know, coming off of the that amazing like Gabe Sapolsky run of Ring of Honor, and then Gabe got famously fired from Ring of Honor, then everyone was like, oh, where's Gabe gonna go? And then the news came out, oh shit, they're starting an American off branch of Dragon Gate, which Dragon Gate at the time was like doing crazy cool stuff in Japan. And he kind of started off promoting these Dragon Gate shows and Evolve. And then this ends up being the first anniversary show of the promotion. And one of the coolest things was it coincided with Danielson's brief return to the indies. So I'm not sure if you recall that time. This was after Danielson's foray into WWE, his whole thing with that Nexus angle where they did a beatdown on Raw, and Danielson choked out who was it, the ring announcer with his tie.
Yeah, I can picture his face, but I don't remember his name. A Todd, is it a Todd or a Mike? Doesn't matter.
Is he the announcer for AEW now? Is it the same guy?
Justin Roberts.
I don't know
who it was. I don't know. I don't know what he's doing now, but that's who he chose.
We'll get the fact checkers on that later on. But yeah, so then Danielson gets famously fired for choking this ring announcer, which I assume they were just like, hey, dude, our sponsors are quite angry. We're going to have to just like temporarily let you go. You can go have some fun matches on the indies for a while, and then we'll bring you back in a couple months. Like, I assume that was what happened. But we got to have some bloody awesome Danielson matches on the indies. Everyone, I think fans were like so excited to get American Dragon back for a little bit. I'd say this was probably the high point, the highlight of that little exodus back onto the indies before he eventually went back to WWE.
Yeah, I actually didn't realize that was the timing of it all. And that sort of explains, I think, maybe a bit of how hot the crowd was for this match. Just the fact that Danielson he's back. We've got our boy back to deliver that sort of high quality wrestling that we know he can, that we don't expect he's going to be able to do in WWE or was going to be able to do. And so like, yeah, the fact that he's on the indies is probably in between there is probably a big part of why everyone was super hot for Danielson. Like obviously hot for the whole match, but like they were behind Danielson for this Dragon Gate USA match for sure.
Oh, so much. So when we first watched it, we watched it with the commentary on, with the delightful commentary of Leonard F. Shakarison, if that is his real name, and Lenny Leonard, who I think, fantastic commentary team. I thought we both agreed when we watched that, commentary really brought that match to the next level, which... And then when I did a rewatch of it today, I actually dug out my old Dragon Gate USA DVD of this show, Enter the Dragon. Holding that in my hot little hands here. The first anniversary celebration show of Dragon Gate USA from July 24th, 2010 at the ECW Arena. And they had a really cool option on this this DVD to play it without commentary.
Okay.
And it was funny because as good as the commentary was that we watched it, it was almost even better getting to just sort of like have a bit more of that like live crowd experience of watching it on the rewatch. And I thought it actually made it even better. But yeah, I could actually hear, pay attention to a lot more of the crowd chants that were going on.
Yeah.
And one of them that was quite tickled by was, "He's too violent." So I guess the idea that it was too violent for WWE and he got fired. There was another part of like some sort of chant to do with choke him with a tie or something like that. But
there was a couple of chants as I was watching them. Like I just can't work out what they're saying. Like I was watching it on this YouTube video, and so the sound compression is a bit wonky anyway. But I just like I can't piece together what they're saying. But that must have been it. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. But yeah, the crowd was so hot for this, and I think it really, like, especially watching it without the commentary, you can tell that this crowd is just so stoked to have Dragon back. They're, you know, all of the classic, you know, best in the world chants, the you're gonna get your fucking head kicked in, which was you always forget a little bit about these things, then you hear that and you're like, the wave of nostalgia that you get is so good.
And again, with this small arena, when they start that chant, like it picks up and like the whole arena's chanting and it is awesome. And just like to start the early comparisons with the other match, it's like you heard it at one point in the Forbidden Door match where someone tried to start that chant, they did one round of it, no one joined in, and it just stopped. And you're like, ah, oh. Like I know, I understand it's pretty hard to start a chant with how many tens of thousands of people are there. But like when it goes in the smaller arena of this Dragon Gate USA show, that you're going to get your fucking head kicked in. It's like it's just really it's awesome.
The best part is like it's such an odd beat for a chant, so yeah. Probably doing that in a massive basketball arena in Long Island or Staten Island or wherever the hell this Forbidden Door show took place, probably not the easiest chant to get caught on, but it's sort of one of those examples of like, all right, that's the difference between a rabid, red-hot, hardcore wrestling audience at the ECW Arena, you know, the home of indie wrestling at this point, really, versus a massive basketball arena with a lot of people there that, a lot of them seem like they still really love Danielson, but maybe more like the WWE version of Danielson,
Like even if everyone,
a bit different.
Even if everyone in that arena wanted to chant, it's really hard to sync up something that long. Like if you're going more than two syllables, like it's probably just not going to happen.
Yes, not easy. But I mean, before I forget that, mentioning the commentary, like it was funny both with commentary and without commentary. That first match was bloody awesome, but there was a lot of things I remember that I thought the commentary analysis of the first one was like really, really good. And then getting to the commentary of the Forbidden Door one, let me say, especially when I was rewatching this on my own in preparation for this show, mm-hmm. I so wish there was a no commentary option for this one.
Yeah. Like it's the McGuinness anti-Danielson shtick. It's getting really old. And it's not always mm-hmm. awful, like, but yeah, there's bits of the AEW commentary for that match that I'm like, that's not bad. It's okay. They've brought up something interesting. They've pointed out something, but then sort of that's maybe 50% of the commentary. And then the other 50% is just like these snarky little asides or them trying to have jokes with each other. And it's like, guys, just commentate the match. Like, there's a real, it's a, like, not as good as 2010 match, but there's still a really good match happening in front of you. Just talk about it, please.
Oh, man, it was so frustrating. And, like, you know, bless Taz's cotton socks. I thought, you know, I think we agree he used to be quite a good commentator back in that SmackDown 6 era. But, man, I feel like he really, it's between him and Nigel, there was a lot of nonsense going on here. And I'm like, come on. Like, isn't it the job of a commentator to, like, make what you're seeing, like, lift it up, you know, make both of these guys sound even more impressive? And then all we're getting on commentary is this, like so just hokey, like, fake heel commentary of saying that, like, Danielson's, like, weak and feeble and, like, well, I'm like, how does that elevate this match? Like, if Danielson's weak and feeble and he's, you know, getting beaten up by Shingo, what does that say about Shingo? I don't know. It's just really frustrated me.
And I think another thing that happens with particularly McGuinness's stuff is that, like, because he starts with that weak and feeble or, like, the anti-Danielson stuff, then later on in the match when he's saying, oh, Danielson should quit, Danielson needs to think about, like, his own health, like, that's good commentary it's fine commentary in a normal match. But because it's been sort of flavored by all the stuff you said previously, it just sounds like the more continuation of he doesn't have it, or he shouldn't be here. It's like, and even, like, on its own, it would probably be okay, but in that whole context, it's just this, you know, 25 minutes of him putting down one of the top guys in the company. It's like, what are you doing? Like, I understand what he's doing. He's trying to build a match that might not happen.
Yeah, I mean, if we did not get this Nigel versus Danielson match, and we've sat through, like, a year of this, like, grating commentary, I'll be quite annoyed. But, the other thing that I thought was, like, quite a strange one was, obviously, this match is a different place in time. You know, this is the opening round of the Owen Hart Cup or whatever it is. But I, especially when I rewatched it today, I was quite struck by, like, AEW is normally quite good for sort of referencing history, and especially when that history is, like, affecting something that we're seeing here. This being, like, a rematch of a match that I think was a lot of people's match of the year for 2010, that, like, the Dragon Gate USA match wasn't, I mean, unless I missed it, I don't think it was referenced a single time on commentary.
No, I don't think so. And I don't know, maybe that it's just too old and it's too niche, but, like, they don't have to go into detail. They could have, said this, like, first met 14 years ago and just like, oh, wow, these guys have got history. It didn't need to be a big thing, but, just no mention at all feels odd.
I have a feeling, because Excalibur's normally really good with this stuff, you know, one of the more knowledgeable guys, especially about independent wrestling and all that. I can almost guarantee, I feel like Excalibur had that in his notes to talk about in the early portion of this match, and that was all just shot to hell by, you know, us getting a great, like, 10 minutes of Taz and Nigel going on this, like, anti-Danielson tangent thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, yeah, I hate to you know, be on the negative Nancy side of things. If anything, I want this episode to be more about how darn awesome the first match was. Rewatching it made me so happy. I think there's a lot of stuff that I you kind of, like, forget about what Danielson did so well during this time, and I was amazed that, like, because obviously he's done a lot of really cool stuff as a you know, bad guy in AEW, and sort of being the bully kind of type, and that awesome match and feud that he had with, like, Kingston and that whole thing. But, man, Danielson is, like, such the perfect babyface.
Yeah, he's very good. He's... Sorry, I'm just having a look at my notes here. It's like, he's very good. That's the insight I've got. I was just going to say, like, just before we... The Forbidden Door match, something that has improved for them both over time is their their presentation, both Danielson's and Shingo's presentation, is just like, and it happens from having wrestled for a long time, but it's both just top notch. Like, they come out to the ring and Shingo looks awesome. He's got the mask and the feather coat and the hair, and he looks rad as hell. And like, he still looks cool in 2010, but he looks awesome now. And Danielson,
yes,
like, I'm not the biggest fan of the dreadlocks, but it's a specific look, whereas in 2010 he's sort of just a bit unshaved and you're like, oh, he's so you sort of have to rely on the fact that he's Danielson and he's awesome to sort of get his vibe more so than just the initial impression. But that doesn't matter. Everyone in 2010
does. It's so funny because I was watching like the visuals of that first one and I was like, just seeing Danielson all this time ago, he's obviously gone through a lot of life since then, but he just seemed like a such a plucky, young, handsome fella. You know, he's got the short hair, the short beard. He's just like, I don't know. And then, like, you see fast forward and you're like, man, this dude's lived a life.
He's just gone through so many different looks, like the bald all over, the this scruffy beard, short hair look, the tidy short hair look, the scruffy long beard, long hair, now the beard and the dreadlocks. It's just like, he mixes it up.
Let's not forget bald wizard Danielson, that great era with the crazy beard, the bald head and the wizard cloak that he used to come out to. That was an underrated look, I feel. But yeah, a lot of differences.
All right, let's get into this match.
All right. So this it was the main event, and I think that obviously very, very different, like the match placement this compared to that. This is like the main event of what was a pretty darn great show from memory, and it was clearly the match that everyone in this audience came to see. Which was very different to, you know, being positioned. I think they ended up being like match 5 or 8 on like a 18 match card on the other one.
Yeah.
So that's probably going to affect crowd energy. But yeah, from the opening entrances in this one for the 2010 Dragon Gate USA match, these fans were just so hyped. I can't tell you how much I feel like wrestling is better when streamers are involved.
Yeah, the streamer entrance. It's just like, oh, we're all hyped. We're visually showing how hyped we are.
And right in the opening moments of the match, before they even make contact, we get like a raucous, you're going to get your fucking head kicked in chant. So good.
Yeah, that was so hot. And then like, then the match starts and like, they don't start slow. Like they get into it pretty hard, pretty quickly. But Danielson does he just rolls out of a knuckle lock. Like he does a back roll to get out of a knuckle lock and reverse it onto Shingo. And just this reversal of a knuckle lock, the crowd's just like, yeah, that's awesome. It's like, it was pretty awesome, but you guys are hyped.
It's so good when fans just get excited about little things because they love someone so darn much. But yeah, I thought that the early part was kind of like a great sort of like, slow feeling out process kind of deal. We could see sort of like Danielson targeting like the arm early on, which, you know, as the match goes on, is sort of like becomes a key part of things. But yeah, what I really loved about a lot of this too was how kind of back and forth the match was, you know, when I was on rewatch.
Yeah. Danielson sort of took it for a bit of the, was it back to front? I don't know. Yeah. They sort of did have their heat segments for a bit, but it was never sort of super long, and it wasn't like, oh, one half of the match was one of them, one half was the other. Sort of it went back and forth a lot.
Yeah, and I think the kind of intensity, like one of the things I really loved about this is the way that intensity kind of like ramped up through the match. Like sort of we had the slower kind of bit that was more like wrestling oriented, and then we kind of like built up through the strikes. And I mean, if you were doing sort of like a wrestling lesson, like this is a really great like textbook example of how to sort of like escalate a match and kind of bring it up, and then they get to a really like fever pitch and then sort of like bring it down again so you can like bring them up even further. Like man, I thought so much of this was just really, really well done.
Yeah. And I think it helps then that you've got Danielson being so hot with the crowd at the moment. So he can do stuff when he gets the crowd back on his side. Like, they're always going to be sort of 100% in to be back on his side. And then when Shingo's sort of getting back on top, he's so explosive that, like, you can't help but be like, oh, now he's back on top, and be amped for it with how sort of suddenly he does that.
Oh, yeah. And, like, who better in terms of, like, selling and, again, being, like, one of the greatest sort of, like, sympathetic good guys you'll ever see in wrestling than Danielson to really make a lot of this stuff look like... I mean, it's not like Shingo needs help to make it look vicious, but
yeah.
It really just made it and brought it to that next level, I thought. Like, even something as simple as, like, Shingo in the earlier part of this match, or maybe middle part of this match, I remember, just hit, like, a really rad Mongolian chop. And
yep.
Like, they made it look so badass. It was awesome.
I've got, like, as we went through the match, I was just like, most of my notes are just really cool spots that they did that were either, like, super explosive, or a couple of things that I'm like, oh, I haven't seen that before. And so it's like, it's unique. But most of it wasn't new stuff. It was just executing it at that really high level of that real explosivity that you're just like, yeah, that is intense.
I think intensity is a great word for this match, because I feel like there's a excellent intensity on both sides in this, both for when Shingo's on top, but also when, like, Danielson, he's like, fights from underneath, like, so damn well, and, like, everything is done, like, with so much, like, impact and intensity. Even, like, that stood out to me, this one, compared to the other match. Like, a lot of the things in this one, obviously, you know, guys get older, 14 years of, like, wrestling a lot into a very, very high level is gonna take you down a bit. But, like, there were things in this match that we did see repeated in the second match, but yeah. I thought were so much more intense in this one, you know, between the strikes, like, even the... a bit later on, the awesome Regalplex that Danielson hits in both matches. I thought the Regalplex in this one was so much more badass and mm-hmm. impactful than the one that it sort of was more of a roll-through, kind of more gentle, caring Regalplex in the following match.
Yeah, and with that, and I think... You watched it without the commentary the second time, but with the commentary going along with that, even just they get hyped for it being a Regalplex, and they shout it out. And in the Forbidden Door match, like, they make a snide reference to it being something he learned from Blackpool or something like that. And it's like, well, just call the move, guys. Mm. Sorry, I don't want to keep shitting on the commentary. But
oh, man. It's a tricky one. But I think there is so much to love about this first match that it's hard when you're comparing it. It's almost like a indie movie, like an underground indie cult movie that's got it's had a sequel done as, like, a big budget, you know, like, massive production, you know, sequel, and, you know, there's no way it's going to be able to match the magic of the first.
Yeah, this original match is old boy, and then this Forbidden Door match is new old boy. I've never actually seen new old boy. It might be fantastic, but I didn't also see the point at all.
I was hoping that it was going to be kind of like the El Mariachi trilogy of Robert Rodriguez, where we had the first El Mariachi that was, like, done on a shoestring budget, and one of the greatest examples of, like, an underground sort of, like, independent movie being done so well. And then Desperado, with a much bigger budget, was still bloody awesome in its own way. But, probably your comparison is a bit more apt.
Look, I need to it was like two or three weekends ago, I was like, we should watch a trilogy of movies. We should watch the El Mariachi trilogy. And then we watched something else instead. And so I'm entirely unprepared for your analogy here. I'm sorry. I was so close to being ready and I messed it up.
I would suggest to anyone with that trilogy, you only need to watch those first two. I don't think the third one is all that necessary. I mean, other people may disagree. I don't know.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Back to the match. One of the really cool things that stood out to me on rewatch of the Dragon Gate USA one was the great counters and teasing between the when they get to Danielson says, it's time to kick some fucking heads in. And then he starts stomping away at Shingo. They go into like the triangle. And then Shingo like counters up out of the triangle. And then we get some great counters between that and stomps and teasing the Death Valley and then like bringing it down and then getting those hammer and anvil elbows, and then eventually like Shingo does the best job of just like teasing it and getting like so hyped to like finally like pump him up to actually do like the big stay dream thing off the top. Man, incredible stuff.
Well, I'm gonna be honest, I wasn't super familiar with Shingo from back then. Like, I really only sort of, I knew he existed, I was aware of, because I didn't get to watch a lot of Dragon Gate USA, so I only sort of became more aware of him when he was in New Japan for the last few years. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know the Stay Dream as a move. So when he sort of was just carrying Danielson on his shoulders and sort of getting up to the ropes and Danielson's continuing with the elbows and then he catches the arm, like, that's such a... And then hits the Stay Dream, so like this avalanche thing with the arm trap. Like, it's just all part of the move, apparently. But I'm just like, oh, he caught the arm to stop it and then hit the move. It looked really cool and just like was a really good blending of two moves that like these two guys do and putting them together in a way that makes so much sense for him to hit him. It was, it was a cool, cool way to learn about the Stay Dream for me.
That's awesome. Just that whole thing of like was just done so perfectly. Like, I honestly could not think, I mean, maybe I need to get more reacquainted with the year that was 2010, but I can't think that there's anything that would have topped this match from 2010. I mean, when we get to the finish of this match, the whole ECW arena is on their feet chanting match of the year. Just such a bloody cool atmosphere. You know, we had the dueling chants, you know, just sort of like around that Stay Dream kind of moment. Like the strike exchange that we got between the like crazy headbutts and elbows and slaps and I guess this match took place in July. I guess that's like quite your summer kind of like time in America. Because when that like sweat started flying and you get that like awesome sort of like almost smoke of sweat through the mist lights.
So when they're hitting those big strikes as well, and like Shingo's lariats, he's hitting those strikes on Danielson's sweaty chest, and you just see the mist of sweat come off as he's nailed him with it. You're just like, man, he hit him so hard, and it just looks so cool. It's like when Jackie Chan does his fight scenes, they add powder to stuff. So, like, there's this puff of something, so you get that extra reaction. They're just doing that in this match with their bodies. Just sweating up, and you get that effect. and it looks awesome.
Or like the Jeff Jarrett baby powder.
Yeah, the Qatar Fall powder. Yeah.
Yeah, though that specifically, I think the pumping bombers that Shingo hits, and then especially that second one when Danielson does just the coolest like somersault sort of like sell of it. And you see a lot of dudes like go to do that kind of like flippy sell of a big lariat or whatever. And that's one of the things where it's just sort of become so like shticky. Like it's like sort of one of those, oh yeah, this is how everyone takes like a fancy bump to a you know, big clothesline or whatever. But like in this match, I'm like, there's something about it, the way Danielson took it, it just felt like, oh, that's not preposterous. That's not like, oh, why are you doing a backflip bump out of a thing? It just looked like he hit him real hard and made him spin as a result.
I think that's got a bit to do with just how, like, the physicality of Danielson. Because anytime he does, like, a flip, and you don't think of Danielson as a flippy guy, but he does his backflip out of the corner, and if someone back body drops him, he might flip out onto his feet. Mm. And he never looks, like, acrobatic when he's doing it. That's just not, I don't think he could if he wanted to, but it also means that it always looks really realistic when he's doing it. It doesn't look like, oh, I set myself up to do a backflip, and so I backflipped and landed on my feet. It's like, no, I tried to get out of the thing and landed on my feet. And so that then goes into as well when he does the backflip sort of sell. It's not this really clean, I'm just doing a moonsault while this guy lariats me. It's, no, I got hit really hard, and so I do this awkward sort of flip backwards as the reaction. And so, yeah, it's just that sort of unique physicality that Danielson's got that makes his stuff look realistic.
Yeah, I think it needs to be a little bit, like, it didn't feel like this was like clunky in a bad way or in an awkward way.
No, not at all.
But it needs to be a little bit clunky for it to feel like a thing. Like if a guy, like you said, if a guy, you know, we see a lot of these flyers these days who are like insanely talented gymnasts or whatever, and they you know, everything they do is like absolutely spot on to a degree that I think needs to be commended. But like at the end of the day, that doesn't have the same sort of like physicality involved, because I don't know, I like a little bit of clunky, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, the sort of amazing energy level that we got down this finishing stretch was sort of like that real top tier of like awesome wrestling for me. Like there's a point when you're just like, man, this is so great. Like that same kind of energy, like when we were talking about the Kenta Loki match down the finishing stretch of that incredible match, where you just get that level of magic, and the crowd and everything just meets in the most perfect way. I love it.
Yeah, and just sort of, do I want to talk about the finish, or do I want to go just quick step back and just talk about a couple of things that I really liked in the match that was like,
yes, please.
I feel like so both of them are submission related things. One's a Danielson thing. So it was, I think Shingo had him in a like just a body scissors, and Danielson's rolled through it and then got Shingo in, like he's Shingo's face down, Danielson's got his arms and his legs all wrapped up. And that was like his hope spot, because that was in a part of the match where Shingo sort of had the advantage for a little bit, and Danielson's in that body scissors, and his big hope spot is counter to a submission that looked like it might have got him. It was like, that's really cool. Like it emphasizes how much of like the technical skills he's got, sort of potentially over Shingo, that he can do a hope spot that's just like, yeah, I'm going to quick turn what you did to me into a potentially you're going to tap out.
Yeah, that's like just such great wrestling to me. It's like when you're actually using like grappling and like counter holds and things like that, and getting such like an emotional reaction from that out of the crowd, is like, that's to me when you know wrestling is being done real, real well.
And my other spot from in the match was when Shingo's trying to get a submission. He got Danielson in the Anaconda Vice for a bit.
Mm.
And his version of the Anaconda Vice, it's like, it's not this, I've locked it in precisely, and so your arm's twisted and your neck's twisted in a way where you don't have much of a choice but to tap out. That's not Shingo's version of it in this match. It is, he is wrenching on so hard. He's like using the absolute power that he has just to be pulling on his neck. And just like, that looks like it's a really different style of submission than what Danielson does or what like some submission guys do. But it looks super brutal because just like, no, it's not a technical thing. It's a I'm strong enough to just keep pulling on your neck thing.
It's like he was just yanking on him. Like,
yeah.
It was so good.
And it's just, yeah, that other version of showing your style of wrestling through a move that can be done like a dozen different ways. But by doing it this way, it was like, oh, Shingo is a powerful guy.
Yeah, and I guess that was like a key story of this match. It's kind of like Shingo's explosive power versus, you know, Danielson's wrestling skill, but also sort of like, you know, his own sort of like explosive, you know, when he think he's like really done, he sort of gets like a surge of kind of energy. Yeah, there was some real magic about that. And something that really made me happy was, and this is almost something that's been lost on the current audience, the amount of joy that everyone got when he finally got that cattle mutilation locked in.
Yeah.
Like, just the whole building, this massive pop. And now I'm thinking about that. Maybe that was because, so, Danielson never really did the cattle mutilation in WWE, right?
Not really, no. So, a bit later, but yeah, certainly not early on.
So this was sort of like maybe the significance of that pop was because that was, you know, one of the first times the crowd like got to see the cattle mutilation back. That was like a key part of, you know, the Ring of Honor American Dragon that all these people really, really loved and thought was the best in the world. So sort of like getting a, like what you're saying, a bit of a payoff to something that you really used to dig that you haven't got to see for a long time.
Yeah.
That made me very happy. That like just a whole building full of people just like popping to such a degree for the cat mutilation. So good.
Yeah. But then to get into the finish that you're talking about where they just amped it up and amped it up. So Danielson hit him with that awesome regal plex. And then he's got the triangle locked in on Shingo. And because they've built that story during the match of Shingo being powerful, like Shingo goes to pick him up, like Danielson got the triangle in his arms and Shingo goes to pick him up in the spot that you've seen a bunch of times before where the guy, the big powerful guy, picks up the other guy and so just power bombs him back down to get him to release the hold. And instead you get Danielson, as soon as he starts to get picked up, just starts throwing those elbows to the top of Shingo's head.
Oh.
And so he's like elbow, 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 and Shingo's still trying to power through, picks him up like he's going to get that power bomb, and then Danielson just elbow, 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 and so Shingo just collapses back down. And that's when Danielson sort of switches around and turns it into the crossface.
The
label lock. Yeah. Which is what your art was of, I believe. I'm going to have a look at your art now. Yeah, that beautiful label lock. Just really cool. Like, no, you're not going to counter my triangle. And in fact, have this instead. And locks it in super tight.
There was another point earlier with the triangle. It might have been on one of the previous ones to this where Shingo did a similar, like, went to get out of it. But then Danielson just like switches to the other arm with the triangle, which I thought was like really, really cool as well. That was like in terms of the moment of the match. Yeah, obviously the label lock was such a great moment, and sort of the emotion of like Shingo like reaching out kind of, and he's like, you know, screaming in pain when Danielson like really is like reefed it back. The other moment that I was like thinking about, especially when I rewatched this, I was like, that there were some great visuals where he had the triangle on Shingo. Maybe that moment when he was sort of like lifting him up, I was like, that would have been real badass too, especially because like the triangle, looking back now, was such a significant thing that was threaded through the rest of the match. But yeah, I only get to pick one, so that was it, I guess.
You just do the same match of the week for the next couple of weeks and just pick all the bits you like.
Man, that happens. I get so much like, I'll do this match and I just get so into it. And I'm like, can I just keep picking this. There was a, I can't remember what match it was, but there was one where I was like, can I just keep picking this same match for like a month?
Yeah, I was listening to you. I was listening to who? Yeah, whenever you're talking about that match, I'm like, yeah, was it Zach Hechicero or was it? Maybe it was before that. I don't remember.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. Maybe one of those Vader matches.
Yeah, but that said, we sort of poo-pooed on the Forbidden Door match a bit, but I think that was less the match and more the commentary. It was still a very good match, and they did that similar shredding the triangle choke throughout that match as well. They did a really good job, and it had a couple of spots. It's like the Forbidden Door match repeated a lot of spots, as you would expect. It's the same two guys wrestling, and it's been 14 years. They don't need to come up with sort of like, you don't necessarily need to be doing the complete counter to what you did before. But they still had a few unique to that spot, unique to that match spots, particularly I was thinking with the triangle. I know we're getting away from the match of the week match, but it was just a really cool Shingo bit where Danielson's got the triangle and Shingo, because it's earlier in the match, he hasn't been worn down as much, had the power to sort of pick him up and counter it into a power slam. Mm. It's like, it wasn't just the pick up and sort of awkward drop power bomb, which sort of can look good, but doesn't always. He sort of picked him up and moved his body around to slam him back down, and it looked really cool.
That was really cool. I remember that. It was like he almost dropped him down, almost like a variation of kind of like the way he does the big Last of the Dragon thing. I don't want people to think that we're making out, or that I'm making out, that the Forbidden Door match was bad in any sense. Like, there was some bloody great wrestling going on. And I thought, like you're saying, like a lot of the stuff they did that was sort of like clearly a nod to the original match. So like, while it wasn't acknowledged on commentary, unfortunately, and it wasn't really made to be part of the you know, story, to where there was probably a lot of the, you know, people watching that had no idea that there was a previous match, I think both Shingo and Danielson made a special effort to sort of give some stuff to us, you know, who are familiar with that first one, and kind of like evolve it in some interesting ways. And I do really think that even, you know, 14 years later, as awesome as Danielson and Shingo were in 2010, if I'm being real, I do think they're even better now somehow, like in their 40s, in 2024. I don't know how that happens, but I think that's true.
Yeah, I think so. While this match wasn't necessarily the better match, it was like that was still really good, and I think there's a lot of about them now that is better than it was then. But, you know, because it is the different sort of arena, and because it is a different spot on the card, and whatever other reasons, like it just didn't get to be elevated to the same level of match it was 14 years ago. But that doesn't make it bad. And they are, like, there's some aspects of them, like I mentioned earlier, their presentation now is, I think, is sort of a step above. Shingo is just the coolest looking guy when he comes out.
Another thing Nubi said is like they've both, interestingly, looking like 2010 versus 2024, they've both filled out their sort of like move repertoire in like an interesting, different kind of way as well, where they've got a lot more kind of like tools to play with. I guess, which stood out a bit more to me, especially on rewatch, where I'm like, I guess we you know, the Bisaku knee, you know, for example, didn't used to be a part at all of Danielson's repertoire back then, but now it's like one of his main finishes.
Yeah, and I also think like there's stuff that Danielson used to do that he still does, but he's built it up now more. Like, I'm specifically thinking of the corner drop kicks, where he's done them for forever, pretty much, but not recently, probably for the last 10 or 15 years, but last 10 years. Like, the way he hits those corner drop kicks is super explosive, and like that can be like a big comeback spot or a big sort of fire spot where like those quarter drop kicks are awesome. And they weren't really a thing in 2010, or at least not in this match. I haven't rewatched all of Danielson's matches, but yeah.
I always thought about that because that was like a key part. Those like, you know, repeated running drop kicks to the corner. That was sort of a key bit of, I felt like, when Danielson really got over, you know, in his sort of WWE run with the whole yes thing and everything like that. And I think he just kind of jacked that from Akira Tozawa because that was always a big part of Tozawa's deal, at least with like the repeated the dives, the suicide dive topes to the outside as well. I think there was a time when Danielson was doing those too. So maybe he has a bit to thank to Akira Tozawa for some of this stuff.
I wouldn't be surprised. There is a move though that he used to do that when I saw him do it in this Dragon Gate match, I'm just like, he can't and probably shouldn't do that move anymore. But I remember that being awesome in all the different ways he did it. But that big springboard from the top rope over the barricade to the outside.
Oh,
like,
so good.
It's like, it's always terrifying because they're just those metal bar barricades that if he misjudged and landed on, there's no way he was not going to break something. But he never did. And so it's just this awesome looking move. And like, obviously you can't do it now. Like A, because he's older, and B, because of just like the size of the ringside area. Like there's a lot further to jump now. And I don't imagine either WWE or AEW would be particularly fond of him like launching full diving force into the crowd like that. Yeah.
I mean, a key part to think about of that as well made it even more death-defying during that, you know, is a great run back in those classic days of Ring of Honor, was their barricades at that time were those awesome metal ones that everyone used to do the banging on, that
you would
often hear stories of people like cutting their hands on like the sharp edges of these like rusty bloody like you know, tin guardrails or whatever they were. So I assume maybe a bunch of people probably got tetanus as a result of these guardrails. But man, if you had have landed on those, that'd be not a very nice thing to happen.
Yeah. That's a big move. I understand why it's gone, but I still miss it.
And similarly, I think I've seen him do it a little bit, but that awesome, and this was a key part of building up the cattle mutilation, you know, where he'd sort of like have, you know, both of the arms and the chicken wing, and I guess the way he used to also like the cross-faced chicken wing was another key part of his repertoire that I guess we've maybe seen some nods to in the AEW run, but he sort of retired it for a long time. But mainly that awesome sort of like bridging tiger suplex from behind, being another part of when he's like going for the cattle mutilation, and then oh no, suplex, such a cool looking move.
Yeah,
man, that Danielson fella, pretty good.
Yeah, right.
no wonder why he's. I don't know if anyone else is ever going to catch up to the amount of matches of the weeks that Danielson's gotten so far. We'll see.
No, you had a couple of Vader ones in there, but like it was only two or three. It wasn't that long. But Danielson's is the MVP of the MOTW.
Yeah, so far. There was a time when, as you mentioned, it was just basically the Bryan Danielson match of the week series.
You can't argue though. It's you're not wrong.
There's a reason why a lot of people are always like that. This guy is the best wrestler in the world. Like I don't think that was hyperbole.
Just wanted to mention, this is just the other note I've got. The finish to their Forbidden Door match was almost the same as the finish to the Dragon Gate match. Real similar. It was that same. He has him in the triangle. Shingo tries to pick him up, so he hits him with the elbows. And the only difference was, instead of this time going down into the lapel lock, he's just got him in a armbar, so sitting on his back, pulling the arm up, armbar. And I'm like, and it still looked really good. And it's still another like version of a submission that you go, he's just wrenched it in really tight. It's not that this is a better submission than other submissions, but he's got this one at this time wrenched in so tight. Same with the little bell lock in the original match, where it's just like, yeah, of course he has to tap out. So, yeah, the skill level of these guys definitely didn't decrease.
No, I reckon if you rewatch this match, both matches on mute, so you can't hear the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't hear the commentary. I would say these two matches would probably be a heck of a lot closer in terms of quality.
Yeah.
Because in ring, both of these matches were great.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think this has been an interesting chat. I was hoping it wouldn't be too much just like me complaining about how disappointing the rematch was. I think we've hit on some interesting stuff on, like, you know, the reasons why maybe one was better. But, you know, at the end of the day, both of these guys are fantastic. And I thought both of these were real good matches.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. More Shingo in the match of the week. That's all you should have. Oh, Shingo and Zach from the G1 like 4 years ago, 3 years ago, whichever one it was.
Need to do a rewatch of that. Well, or I mean, another one that I think, especially hearing you say you weren't that familiar with Dragon Gate, I would highly recommend you or anyone else who might be in that boat to check out like Shingo's incredible Big Boss Shingo heel run at the top of Dragon Gate around this time. Probably, you know, anywhere from like 2008 through like 2013. He was just on a tear, having incredible main events on all the massive epic Dragon Gate shows in Japan. I remember specifically, really fondly remembering at a series with BB Hulk, really like hatred sort of feud, where BB Hulk was just a really great sort of like sympathetic kind of baby face. And Shingo just brought like this level of hatred out of him, and culminating in a fantastic like hair versus hair match between Shingo and BB Hulk. There was another some amazing Open the Dream Gate championship matches during I think Shingo had like just an amazing run as champion of Dragon Gate at that time. Some amazing defenses. I remember specifically one against like Don Fuji that I really loved. Some ones against Misaki Mochizuki that were just incredible. But yeah, basically any Shingo that you watch in Dragon Gate from that time was just on another level. And I, as awesome as his New Japan run has been, which I'm not taking away from that, I would say, hand on heart, it'd be hard for me to think it any of it sort of like tops the top end of his Dragon Gate stuff. So I don't know. If you ever feel like looking into that, I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised.
Okay. I'll see what I can find. I'm mostly just worried about where I'm going to be able to watch it, because as I was watching this match, I'm watching it on a weirdly aspect ratioed YouTube video. And they've got on all the turnbuckles, they've got the DGUSA.TV. Mm. I'm like, maybe I can go just like find it and watch it properly. No, DGUSA.TV is now a martial arts school in New Jersey. That's what that website is. So
hilarious. it's a weird one, yeah, with what happened there. Because I remember Dragon Gate USA used to have their own sort of like streaming service for a time. Then I guess they sort of were bought unofficially by WWE. When Gabe sort of like went into the fold there. So I saw on you know how WWE's got this new YouTube channel thing where they upload sort of like rarities and stuff.
Oh, okay. I didn't, but that sounds interesting. Yeah, go on.
I think it's called like The Vault or something like that. I only mentioned it because they posted some interesting matches of when they were trying out Morishima during that sort of like heyday of when he was doing awesome stuff with Ring of Honor and was like Ring of Honor world champion. They brought him in and he had a match with Jamie Noble and another tryout match with Charlie Haas, I think. I may be getting the second of those wrong. But
No, that's right. I'm just scrubbing through it now.
So apparently those matches are on there. But yeah, I was going through their page and they actually had like a six-man tag from Dragon Gate USA, weirdly, on that WWE Vault channel. So it's so strange the way these things happen. But yeah, I'd say for the most part, if you want to watch some old Dragon Gate USA, Dragon Gate, there's an excellent Dragon Gate Japan streaming service that can be checked out. And then also, if you go in and do some research, you'll find a lot of good stuff, I think, on like, Daily Motion and those kind of places. But, yeah, I think that brings us to the end of our episode here. Thank you so much, Bradley. Do you have any other last final thoughts?
No, I don't think so. I think we've covered all the stuff I wanted to talk about, but thank you so much for having me on again.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm looking forward. I wish we had more movie stuff to talk about in the finishing up here. But the one movie that I'm very excited to talk to you about, because I haven't got to see it yet, is the new Furiosa movie. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Mad Max movies, and I heard this Furiosa movie is quite divisive. So I'm going to see it tomorrow night, and then I'm very excited to talk to you at a later date about what you thought about that.
Yeah, I've seen it, but I'm happy to come see it with you tomorrow night as well. So we'll
good. You'd seen it twice in the cinemas.
Yeah, I'll rewatch. I enjoyed it. Yes, so I'm on the if it's divisive, I'm on the it was good side.
Ooh, excellent. So I think the last time I saw a movie twice in its theatrical release at the cinemas was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Do you remember what your last one doing that for was?
I'm sure I could find that out. It would have been another thing where I saw it, because I often see more movies opening weekend, and then I've got friends like you who don't, and so they want to see it, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll go see it again two or three weeks later, but I can't remember what the last one was specifically.
Okay, well, I look forward to that, my friend. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Do you you have anything to plug?
I do not. I never do, and I will never.
Well, I thought I'd give you the opportunity regardless, I appreciate, you know?
That if people in Brisbane should go to your thing on this weekend at the, the Mini Mall?
Yes, the Forge Ford Mini Mall at the station. Oh, thanks so much, Brad. Look at you, got my back with these plugs.
I'll see if I can show up. There you go. There's my plug. I might be there. I might come and say hello to Chris and then hello to you, dear listener.
Oh, what a time. You can come along to the Forge Ford Mini Wall, not only have a chat with Chris things, but also a dear friend, Bradley. Man. All right. Thanks so much, Brad. I'll talk to you later.
All right. See you later, man.
See you, dude. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Lovely. That was a fun chat. I had a great time. Thanks again, Brad, for coming on. I hope you all enjoyed that. And again, I hope you know, you don't feel a bit like I never want to be elitist with this stuff, you know, just because I didn't care for the rematch quite as much. Please don't think that's me sort of, you know, hating on AEW or anything like that. Yeah, I just get passionate about things, I guess. And when I really, really love something, it's you know, hard to hold that in or vice versa. So, yeah, I hope you guys dug that. Big old thank you for listening. I have a little story for you here in the back end. I forgot to mention at the start, so not quite wrestling related, but something that I thought is worth mentioning. So last night my partner Kayla and I had my dad over. We had a little barbecue on the back deck with the Japanese grill that I've got, which requires coals to go in it, and I got this cool new coal chimney lighter deal where you have the starter things at the bottom, you light the coals, and it makes the whole process a lot easier thanks to the gravity and such. So I lit that up. I had that sitting off to the side while we waited for those coals to get ready, And then finally I thought, all right, we're ready to go here to put the coals into the actual grill. I pick it up and those coal chimney starter thing had burned a hole through the table that I had it sitting on. So very close to starting an actual house fire. I felt like a goose, I'll say that. It was a moment of terror. Thankfully everything was okay. I got some water on there, and yeah, crisis was averted. But I had a most scary moment where I thought, man, who would have thought that you shouldn't put something with hot coals on a wooden table? Well, I've learned a lesson for next time, and then maybe a lesson for any of y'all out there. No, honestly, I think most of you guys probably have more common sense than I would. But that's that little anecdote on the heels of that. Big thank you to the team at Social Suplex for allowing me to do this podcast, socialsuplex.com, where you can check out this podcast, a variety of other red wrestling podcasts, such as Keeping It Strong Style, One Nation Radio, the Trish and Sarah podcast, Imps WWE Adventure, Tunnel Talk, all of the things. So thank you, Social Suplex, and thank you guys for listening. If you would like to support, or you'd like to get any of this art, you know, Match of the Week art prints, t-shirts, calendars, what have you, christhings.com.au is the place to go for those. If you feel like it, jump on there. If you're not already, be following me at christhings on the old Instagram. And lastly, I have my newsletter. You can sign up to that on my contact page. But I think that's about it for today. Badger's barking. I think that's time to wrap things up. Thanks, guys. I'll see you next week. Bye.
I knew the hammer lock.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last. Save now at CedarPoint.com.